This meeting is now being recorded.
Thanks to everyone for joining us. This is Michael Karanikolas for the record, one of the co-rapporteurs of the subgroup. It's been a little while since we've had a meeting. We've gone through the public consultation process now and received a lot of very useful feedback. I think we've had some great responses, actually, to our initial recommendations, our draft recommendations. A lot of very positive stuff, a lot of endorsements, a lot of enthusiasm, and a lot of very useful and constructive feedback, input. With that said, unless there are any objections, I'd like to jump right into the thematic discussions, which is we're going to look at each of the four sort of thematic heads in turn and discuss the feedback that we received. Based on that, we're going to discuss next steps forward. So seeing no objections, I'd like to jump into the first thematic issue, which is probably the one that attracted the most attention, the one that got the most comments back, and that is on the DIDP. So hopefully most or some or all of you have had a chance to review the submissions that we received, or at least to review the very helpful summaries that we got from staff of the different inputs that we got. We got a lot of positive statements. I want to, in particular, I don't think we need to go through in detail every time somebody mentions, you know, I agree with this or I endorse this or this and that. But I do think it's useful to note that several of the ICANN staff responses that we got back mentioned that some of our recommendations, or several of our recommendations, are apparently already common practice in dealing with DIDP requests. They said that we're recommending it, and it's done routinely anyway. And that, to me, is actually great to hear, because that, I would see, as a very strong argument for including it in the policy, because if it's being done anyway, then presumably it's not going to impact operations to formalize that or to just include that as part of the policy if it's already standard operating procedure. As far as I can see, the major issues that I saw on the DIDP, the major areas where we got objections or feedback that something needed to be changed, the two really big ones were on recommendation number 11, which deals with trade secrets and commercial information, and recommendation number 15, which deals with attorney-client privilege. So those are the two that in the responses back, I saw a significant amount of pushback and a significant amount of objections. So in terms of revising the recommendations, the primary focus, as far as I'm concerned, should be on those two. Now, I don't necessarily want to completely drop any mention of them, particularly because we got other inputs back saying they specifically supported that we address those. But I think that based on the feedback that we got, that those recommendations should be very substantially redrafted and reworked to address the objections that we got in. So I wanted to, at this point, throw open the floor for any objections, if anybody has any suggestions for different areas that we could take that in beyond what we got. Just suggestions on how we should address those two recommendations specifically, and just to brainstorm out some ideas, if anybody has anything that they want to throw out there now, or if anybody wants to subsequently provide something in writing, that would be welcome as well. Is there anyone that wants to speak on those two specific objections, those two specific recommendations, number 11 and number 15, based on the feedback that we got? And I see Chris's hand is up.
Thanks, Michael. Chris Wilson for the record. And maybe if it's helpful, I don't know how many people have had a chance to look at the filings or frankly even the summary. So if everyone has, then they can, I guess, stop it. But could you maybe go over quickly, if possible, just what the key problems were, I guess, or suggestions were from commenters about those two recs? So we have so those that aren't doing this day to day can get a sense of what the problem is.
Sure. So I'll just go into that first, and then we'll push over to David McCauley, who's also got a hand up. There were several objections raised to the objection to recommendation number 11 for trade secrets and commercial and financial information not publicly disclosed by ICANN. Those went in a few different directions. I think it was the IPC said that trade secrets by definition had to be kept secret, and so if they were disclosed, that would create kind of a paradox because it's not a trade secret if it's disclosed, and so you can't define a trade secret that way. There's been objections raised that exception is necessary for ICANN to maintain its commercial relationship.
Michael,
yes?
Can I interrupt you for a sec?
Yes,
we have a new feature now. We have captioning. We have live captioning. However, it does require to slow the pace down just a bit so our captioning person can actually get things properly. I mean, they're excellent. They do a great job, but they do a much better job if you speak just a little bit slower because you're in the habit of speaking quite quickly.
Of course, my apologies. I work a lot with translators at different events that I do, and this is a note that I've gotten a lot, so well taken. In terms of the commercial exception, we've heard a lot about objections that disclosing the information wouldn't be fair to the companies, would be harmful to the companies, it would impact on ICANN's ability to maintain its relationships and to carry out its operations. Similar to the stuff that was raised during our process, so I think that needs to be, our approach to that exception needs to be rethought. ICANN raised an objection that our proposed rewording could potentially broaden the exception rather than narrowing it, which is an interesting one that I hadn't considered. And with regards to solicitor-client privilege, attorney-client privilege, generally, the objections were, ICANN's objection was a little bit vague, I thought, and it's a little bit difficult to pin down. But there were mostly objections saying that, look, attorney-client privilege is a boilerplate protection, and so should be respected because it's such a common thing. And so I'm personally very receptive to both of those arguments, but I think it's useful to have a bit of a discussion to try to brainstorm out some ideas for how these can be rethought. So why don't we go over to David McCauley for some ideas.
Thanks, Michael. It's David McCauley speaking for the record. Not so many ideas right now. I just wanted to state that I agree with your assessment that the two principal areas of focus would be the confidential information disclosure and the attorney-client privilege. I agree with you also that the ICANN comment in this respect was a little bit opaque. And my hope is that the ICANN staff will engage maybe in the next call or on the list with some ideas of their own in this respect. And I just wanted to add, Michael, that while those are the two prime issues, I also think it would bear discussion at some point about ICANN's concern of the cost involved. And the way ICANN put the cost issue is, this could drive costs. That's something I had said in the past, but it wasn't all that clear. But they did say, and, you know, meeting those costs could cause ICANN to fall off somewhere else, such as in policy development. That's actually a major statement that will be of interest to other SOs and ACs. And so I think we need to sort of flesh that out and find out, you know, what on earth does that mean? And so that's all I really wanted to say right now. With respect to ideas on the issues of attorney-client privilege and document disclosure, my personal sense is that there should just be some protection at least for the non-disclosure agreements, as I said in the past. And on attorney-client privilege, I frankly think that we should ask ICANN to engage a bit more, perhaps with a proposal in this area. Is there any wiggle room? Is there anywhere they can see their way to address what the group is asking and yet protect attorney-client privilege somehow? Because, as I said and as you said, I think their comment was a little opaque in that area and a couple others. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much for that. I was going to get to the areas of cost and a few other sort of minor things after we engaged on the what I thought is the two major ones. So certainly I don't think that 11 and 15 are the only ones that need to be revisited. We are getting there, but I wanted to deal with the major ones first. I think it's an excellent idea to go back for more engagement on the attorney-client privilege one specifically and generally to ask for clarification from ICANN, so we can definitely do that. In terms of the commercial one, maybe it would be useful if I just sort of batted around an idea that I've been mulling over that's, I guess, about half-formed at the moment, which is I think that one of the better ways to clarify that is to push more control or more of a say into the process over to the people who provided the information or to the commercial stakeholders themselves who are going to be impacted by the disclosure. I think that that was something that was sort of tried to be hinted at in the recommendations that currently are, but I don't think that that was properly fleshed out. So I'm thinking about rephrasing it so that there's a clearer onus on the information holders or the third parties that are impacted by this to, I'm still reluctant to call it consent to the disclosure, but to raise objections which would be almost determinative, if I can put it that way. The phrasing that I kind of have in mind is that, like, as long as they raise a reasonable objection, it would be withheld or something like that. In terms of rephrasing that and in terms of the solicitor client privilege one, I don't have a full revised policy in mind that I can sort of present or suggest at the moment, but I was planning on basically over the next couple of weeks giving it a think and trying to recraft that language, and maybe we can agree that basically is the working group that will sort of walk away from this and give it a think for how these two exceptions could potentially be redrafted and maybe come to the next meeting, hopefully with some concrete suggestions, as well as reaching out to ICANN to sort of try to clarify around recommendation 15 around the attorney-client privilege. So does that sound like a good avenue forward for these two? Yep, David?
Thanks, Michael. I think that on the treatment of confidential information, there's going to be a gap, and I think between you and I, we may not be able to bridge it. But let me just react to what you just suggested. Thank you for it. It's a reasonable suggestion. The problem with it, I believe, will be that people who give under a non-disclosure agreement or under some protection like trade secret or otherwise that ICANN agrees to abide by, they're not going to want disclosure, and they're not going to want to lose control of the issue. And so if you have the standard being as long as they raise a reasonable objection, the determination of reasonable would be not in their hands, presumably. It would be in the hands of another, the ombudsman, ICANN, the community, whoever it might be. And that's going to be insufficient. And so it seems to me, and ICANN has every incentive when they receive information under a non-disclosure or confidential clause, they have every incentive to keep this minimal and not to agree to sort of a frivolous claim of confidentiality, because it hamstrings them too. And so, but when a party has trade secret information, which by definition they value highly, they're not going to give control to somebody else to determine when it's going to be disclosed. They enter a contract with ICANN that says ICANN will treat it in confidence, and that's the end of it for them. And, you know, full stop. So I just don't know how we're going to bridge that gap. But I appreciate your suggestion. I just wanted to voice, I believe, I can't speak for the registry stakeholder group, obviously, but I believe that there would be some that may share that opinion in that group and maybe some other groups as well. Thank you.
All right, I see Bernard has his hand up as well.
Thank you, Michael. Just a practical point. We don't have any other meetings scheduled for the transparency group, so if you want to start scheduling these, scheduling 1 and 2 weeks out or such, please reach out to me and we can start looking at the schedule and making arrangements to reserve slots for the group. Thank you.
All right, that is well taken, and we will absolutely do that. In regards to the commercial information, I guess I want to see a solution that's not automatically walling things off. I want to see some sort of a process take place. I think that we have heard other stakeholders supporting that. I know that there are strong opinions on both sides. If you look at the responses we've gotten back, there were also strong opinions in favor of more disclosure of the commercial information. So I do think that we need to maybe work together to try to find a reasonable compromise that finds a proper standard on this. And I think that the best thing to do is to maybe take this forward by email in the meantime and to try to come back to come out with solutions that hopefully address the concerns on both sides while improving the current policy. If I can just move on to the other minor issues or the other issues that were raised. In addition to those two major substantial exceptions, which I think need to be really closely revisited, I did note what ICANN wrote in about the cost concern, and I noted the specific recommendations that ICANN attached to their concerns about costs. One of the ones that I was a little bit surprised at, actually, which I thought was going to be an exception, was the binding timeline of 30 days. ICANN responded and said that they have never taken more than 60 days, 30 days extendable once by 30 days, that they've never gone beyond that original 60 days of responding to a request. So that, for me, was great to hear because presumably that means that it is a reasonable recommendation if they've been living with it since the dawn of the DIDP. I noted that a few of the objections that ICANN raised were based on, I don't want to say misunderstandings because if it's not understood, then it's a problem with the drafting. But areas where the drafting should have been clear. So I think that there's a few specific objections which can be, in terms of costs and resources, which can be addressed by simple little wordsmithing changes to make it more reasonable or to remedy misconceptions about what's being suggested. The major one that I think needs to be revisited as well in terms of costs and is the discussion of the duty to document. That was one where they raised an objection on about the shape that was going to take. They raised cost objections on that. And I think that that's also something that needs to be not necessarily dropped, but maybe clarified quite a bit. So in addition to recommendations 11 and 15, and in addition to the minor little tweaks that need to be done in terms of the specific clarifications. That's the one that I think needs to be redrafted. And I see David saying, he seems concerned with format to request when the information was already public. I saw that as well, but they also, in their response, said that they routinely do that. That was a little bit confusing to me. Oh, they seem concerned with the formatting. Sorry, Dave, David, please go ahead.
Thanks, Michael. I, to be honest with you, I read ICANN's response about a week ago or whenever it came in, and it's been a while. But I, as I recall, I thought they said somewhere, look, if some information is already public and somebody comes and asks us, obviously I'm paraphrasing, and somebody comes and asks us to give that information out in a different format, that doesn't seem to make sense. I thought that's what they were saying. But while I'm on the line, let me just mention one other thing about this cost area. Is I would suggest that one thing we ought to do is go back to ICANN and ask for further comment in this area, looking at it not from the exemption or the provision, the DIDP provision side, but from the remedy side or the other side where ICANN said, oh, by the way, this could have an impact on policy development. I think it would be in our interest to have them speak more to that and to ask them, what do you mean by that? Is there, you know, that's going to affect the community, and we just need to know what that means and find out if it's a serious issue, and if it is, are there ways to work around it? Thank you.
Yeah, that's one of the objections that I meant should be tweaked, because it's their reading of it was not, I don't think, the underlying intention of it. When they talk about format, I think that the intent of that recommendation was that should only apply to material subject to a DIDP that's not already available. Not that if this information is already available in one format that ICANN should take it upon themselves to transfer it into a bunch of different formats. I would agree with ICANN that that's not something that they should be doing. So that was one of the areas that I thought needed clarification, or that I thought needs just a small tweak to address their concern. I'm not sure, but can you clarify the second thing that you mentioned with regards to the cost? I thought that, you know, my intention was to go through their response, find the areas that they had raised an objection to in terms of costs, and either, basically to move through it from there. I think that they were fairly specific on the recommendations that they provided, that they had objected to at the time. Can you clarify what you were, David, do you think you can I ask you to clarify what you meant by that?
Yes, on the cost issue, in several respects, ICANN, and I'm looking for it now, but ICANN mentioned, and I'm reading now from part of, no, I'm sorry, I'm not reading, but in several respects, they said, you know, this could have a cost impact, and it could cause trade-offs in other areas, including policy development. And so if you would like, I'll try and find it and then raise my hand when I find it, just to read that language.
Sure. The approach that I'd suggest is basically to go with what they have on that, because I think they were fairly clear, and to basically work through the specific objections that they've raised and to try to address the cost issues on a case-by-case basis and see where we have the problem. But in the meantime, oh, sorry, David.
Well, I found some language I was speaking to. It's with respect to DIDP recommendation 8. And ICANN's, this is just part of what they said, but they said with the, and they do mention that they are an organization with limited funding. I think it was apparent early on that ICANN was not appreciative of comparing them to a government or an international organization. But in any event, they say, with the limited funding, recommendations that add cost to ICANN's operations then result in trade-offs to other items, such as the ability for the community to implement new policies or innovate on programs or other work underway. There are a few recommendations that could impose costs or otherwise result in unintended effects on ICANN. And that's the language that I was suggesting, that maybe what this group could do is go to ICANN and say, can you elaborate on that? Can, you know, do you sense that there's an immense cost coming your way as a result of DIDP? Or why would you say that? I mean, policy development and policy implementation is obviously the sweet spot of what the community is concerned with. And I think when they mention that as a concern, we should find out more if it's possible. Thank you.
Sure. With regard specifically to Recommendation 8, on the previous page, and the reason why I was a little bit confused by it, is that right on the previous page, under Factual Information on Current DIDP Practices, the first one is, The DIDP process in practice already includes the following. Responses reference information that is already public through the development of narrative responses to requests, recommendation 8. So that's a little confusing because on the one hand, it looks like they're saying, we already do this. And then on the other hand, they're saying, but we can't do it because it would potentially materially interfere with us. But I agree that that seems to be an area that we should be seeking more information. So maybe that, along with the objection to solicitor client privilege, we can ask for a little bit of a clarification on. Bernard, is that an old hand or is that a new one?
No, that's a new hand. A little bit of a follow-up to what David was seeing and maybe or slightly orthogonal. Given the process we've got to follow to get this approved all the way through and through the ICANN board, and having worked with legal on various subgroup issues over the last few months, I just wanted to note that they're really open to sitting down and talking, and they're very accessible. And I would highly recommend it because it could save everyone a lot of time and ink, if you will, to getting to something that makes everyone happy. Thank you.
Okay. I just received, I agree with that. Thanks. I just received a message from Caption First, which says, please promote Caption First to host so I may restart the Caption Pod. I don't think I can do that.
It's okay. We'll take care of that. Thank you.
Okay. Great. Okay. Great. So I think that, that's the major points that I wanted to discuss on, in terms of the DIDP. Just to reiterate, I think that we agree that recommendations 11 and 15 are going to be revisited and that we're going to have another meeting in a little bit trying to find better avenues for those areas. We need to make some small changes with regards to minor objections. I guess I should have had a specific list of those here, but I will bring that to the next meeting of minor changes, which I think can be resolved in response to objections fairly painlessly, and that we need to go through and specifically consider cost implications on several of them, and specifically about duty to documents, and that we will, in advance of the next meeting as well, reach out to ICANN staff for clarification on a few of their responses as well. So those are, as I see it, the main action items for DIDP. Is that okay with everyone? Great, sounds good. Moving on to board deliberations. Sorry that one took so long, but I think that's probably the biggest one that we needed to deal with. Moving on to board deliberations, there really weren't very many negative comments that we got back from that. It was actually quite positively received. The only, I guess, quasi-negative one was ICANN staff mentioned that with regard to grounding objections, grounding the times when material was excised from the minutes, with regard to grounding that in DIDP exceptions, it would depend on the finalization of the DIDP exceptions, which is a fair point. So that needs to be reconsidered. But broadly speaking, the objection, the feedback that we got on the board deliberations stuff was pretty much just positive and endorsements. So that's great to see. I personally, from the feedback, don't think that there's anything that really needs to be revisited based on that. So unless there's anyone that wants to raise a point on that, we'll move on to interactions with governments. Great. So that is my co-rapporteur's time to take over now. So, Chris, I will hand it over to you.
Great. Thanks, Michael. This is, again, Chris Wilson for the record. Looking at the comments that were filed with regard to our recommendation on transparency concerning ICANN's interactions with governments, there was not a lot of positive support for the recommendation, not a lot of, constructive criticism, if you will, other than a couple of comments from the NCSG and then some questions that were posed by ICANN.org. So why don't I can quickly go through that a little bit with folks, and happy to talk more about it. With regard to NCSG comments, I think one constructive comment was that rather than asking for disclosure of all expenditures with regard to political activities, that we set a some sort of monetary threshold for reporting purposes. NCSG suggests $20,000 be the minimum threshold to trigger a reporting requirement. I'm open to maybe making that a little lower, but I do think that I take their point that perhaps no threshold is not reasonable. So this is something I guess we as a subgroup can discuss further either now or on the call. I'm happy to perhaps make an initial suggestion now that the threshold be set at $10,000. Something along those lines, and then we can certainly, make a suggested edit to our rec and then put it out for further discussion on the list. But I think the NCSG's constructive criticism is well taken in this regard. Are there any initial thoughts on implementing a financial dollar threshold for reporting? I don't see any hands raised right now. So why don't I go ahead and I'll make a suggestion. We lower it, we make it 10,000, and then if folks on the list have further comments, we can do that. Additionally, the NCSG suggested that the subgroup define the term, quote, education engagement, which if folks can recall, this is the designation that ICANN CFO uses or has used for Form 990 and reporting purposes in terms of outside vendors that ICANN has utilized. In particular, this category was created, according to Xavier Calvez, the CFO, specifically with regard to the IANA transition and outside vendors that ICANN has hired over the last few years to assist in, quote, education and engagement on the IANA transition. In light of that, the fact that this sort of category was created specifically for the IANA transition, and in light of the fact that the IANA transition is for all intents and purposes completed, albeit notwithstanding our important work in WorkStream 2, I don't know what value we can add by trying to define that or broaden that terminology. I don't know if it's necessary, to be honest. I think if our broader recommendation is adopted, I think that would encompass that type of activity. It's intended to encompass that type of activity, certainly. So I don't know if we need to spend time on defining the education engagement terminology that the CFO has utilized for labeling purposes for reporting. I think we best just not worry about that. But that's my initial take. Anyone have a thought on that or suggestions on that? I don't see any. Oh, Dave McCauley.
Thanks, Chris. David McCauley again. I don't remember. I do remember a series of questions ICANN had, and I thought they were very practical and very good, pointing to perhaps over general terms that we might have used. But I don't remember if it was in the context of education. There are questions along the lines of, can we hand out leaflets? Can we make a speech in a room where government people are present? Can we do this, that, or the other thing? If that affects education, or I'll state it as a general concern, maybe we need to be a little bit more particular in this area. I thought ICANN raised some valid points that I think we should address somehow. If I jumped the gun and you were going to speak to that after this, then my apologies. But that was my comment. Thanks.
Thanks, David. Yeah, this is Chris. Yeah, indeed, I intend to get to ICANN's filing in just a second. I just first was going to tackle the NCSG's two comments and then tackle ICANN ICANN's questions. They do raise some questions about terminology, et cetera, and I will get to that. I think some of them are, all good questions to ask. I think they can be answered directly, and we can figure out how best to do that. But as far as my initial point with regard to the NCSG, I don't think we need to get wrapped around the axle of the particular term that the CFO has used in the past, as far as particular Form 990 reporting purposes. Again, we're creating a separate reporting requirement that would encompass some of that what has been currently reported on Form 990, but it's not entirely about that. So I think my initial take is I don't think we need to take the NCSG up on its offer to define education engagement. That's not to say that we can't provide, and to David's point, and as I answer the ICANN questions, but not that we can't provide guidance, if you will, in our report and recommendations as to what exactly we're talking about. But I don't know if we have to provide a formalized definition of education engagement. But let me go ahead and turn to the ICANN comments on this particular topic, and then open it up for further discussion. ICANN had about 7 or 8 points or questions that they wanted to present to the subgroup about regarding this particular recommendation. One point they did want to make is that some of this information is now included in the board reports that are generated by the CEO's office in advance of every board workshop. And that is indeed true. I think that's been a nice improvement in the last year plus since Joern Marby has taken over as CEO of ICANN. And I think that some of that information that's certainly included in those reports, I think, would be certainly pertinent to our reporting requirement, though I think our reporting requirement would cover more than just what's included in those board reports. And I don't think ICANN was suggesting that those are sufficient, but I do think it's also important to note that those board reports are only as good as the CEO who's currently occupying the office, and there's no guarantee that the next CEO would be interested in doing such board reports. This is an initiative implemented by the current CEO, and so I think to the extent that information is included in the board reports, it'd be good to sort of formalize that reporting requirement so that it's not dependent upon a particular CEO who is in office. They also raised the issue that this protects perhaps these reporting requirements may impose extra costs on ICANN. Again, I totally respect the cost issue. I don't think, however, in my experience, that this whatever additional costs may be incurred, I think will be marginal, nominal. Obviously, ICANN already has a variety of different reporting requirements, lobbying reporting requirements, et cetera. I don't think that there'll be significant additional costs added to this. I think that this reporting requirement will be complementary to what they're already doing to some extent. So while there may be some additional costs incurred in terms of manpower needed to collect information, et cetera, I just do not believe that this will be a substantial cost burden on ICANN. And I think certainly the benefits to the community and to ICANN itself, I think, outweigh whatever nominal costs may be incurred. Getting to their questions, they raised the notion that the definition of political activity, which we use in our recommendation, includes, an attention to influence or inform directly or indirectly, and utilizes various methods of engagement, including newspaper op-eds, letters, speeches, phone calls, et cetera. ICANN points out that these do not align with the definitions of lobbying or engagement in political campaigning that are applicable to ICANN by virtue of U.S. tax laws, U.S. laws and tax regulations. I don't dispute that contention. I think that this definition is intended to be broader than the definitions used in U.S. lobbying law and tax law. I should say, for sake of clarity and elucidation, that this definition is not brought out of thin air. It was I've pulled it from the Foreign Agents Registration Act here in the U.S., which entities need to use for other reporting requirements here in the U.S. for influence activities here in the U.S. So this is not I'm not suggesting that FARA per se, FARA per se applies to ICANN. It doesn't. But I think for utilizing definitions that are currently already in existence, I think this is helpful. So I think while it's true that this definition is broader, it doesn't map exactly to what is included in the Lobbying Disclosure Act or U.S. tax law. I think that's exactly the purpose and point of this exercise, is to include activity that goes above and beyond or outside of those narrow statutory definitions. So that they made a point. I think it's valid, but I think it's perfectly why we have why we're doing what we're doing in this regard. Dave McCauley, I see your hand raised.
Thanks, Chris. David, for the record, with respect to your last point about we want to be broader than the other definition of lobbying, and with respect to a comment you made recently about you suspect that this may not have a substantial cost impact, some of the board reporting, I tend to agree with you on the cost side. But the problem is we don't know. And so I'm just going to reiterate what I said in chat a moment ago. We really do need some more engagement from ICANN in this respect. The one thing we do if we have a broader definition is we could perhaps inadvertently affect their willingness to do speeches, op-eds, letters to the editor, whatever it might be. We have to be careful here, and so I do think we have more engagement from ICANN, because it's good for ICANN to be out there making these kinds of public statements, and I don't want to chill that by an overly aggressive requirement, and I don't see how that could be the case, but I think we should give them a chance to flesh out what their concerns are in this respect. Thank you.
Thanks, David. This is Chris again. I agree. We don't want the impact of this to chill ICANN's engagement. That's not the intent of the reporting requirement. It's simply to provide insight into those interactions that are important for ICANN and the community. I will also say this. You know, we didn't make a specific recommendation as to how often this reporting requirement needs to occur. I think We suggested, at least twice a year would be helpful. I don't think we need to, necessarily go beyond that. So that may mitigate cost as well. We're not seeking monthly disclosures here. I think once every 6 months, in my opinion, would be sufficient. But the subgroup may have, we didn't make a specific recommendation on that. I think that's something that maybe the CCWG itself or, the community as a whole could decide what's sufficient. But I think, that would mitigate the cost factor. I think would mitigate sort of the burden, whatever there's a burden imposed on ICANN. I think that would mitigate that. Personally, I think, these reporting requirements exist in a variety of contexts for a variety of entities. I've never seen it, people not engaging because of them. I think they're meant to sort of they're fashioned in such a way, to not serve as a burden. Certainly in the context of U.S. engagement and with governments, it's you always have the First Amendment considerations there, and they certainly haven't been seen as an imposition or a violation of that. But I think that I think we'll continue to obviously get more feedback from ICANN. On that, perhaps they can even provide us input on what the cost is for them to comply with their current reporting requirements as far as the lobbying disclosure goes, et cetera, and to what extent there's a cost associated with putting together the board reports, for example. That'd be helpful to know. But I think that, again, like I said, I think this definition is not pulled out of thin air. It wasn't created at a whole cloth. It's been in use, at least in the United States, for quite some time now, and a variety of entities comply with it. So I think we're on pretty safe ground in that regard. But Hopefully we'll get more. Staff can engage more on that point. Moving right along, a second question they asked is how would this apply, this recommendation apply to an ICANN representative or supported community member if an ICANN representative or supported community member delivers a speech in a room where governments might attend, among others, would intention be shown if the speaker knew government representatives are in attendance, even if there is a broad audience? Two things. One, and actually gets to another question they've asked later, this recommendation wouldn't apply to a supported community member. This recommendation only applies, in my opinion, to ICANN staff, personnel, or agents of ICANN. That may be contractors, et cetera, vendors, et cetera. I think a supported community member, someone who's attending an ICANN meeting and is receiving funding from ICANN, for example, I don't know anyone that reasonably considers that person to be an ICANN representative. They're a representative of their particular community. They're happy to provide some financial. Happen to be getting some financial support from ICANN, but I don't think that changes their standing in this regard. And it certainly wouldn't be our intention, I think, to include a reporting requirement on folks that are not ICANN employees or vendors or contractors for ICANN. So if we need to provide greater clarity in that regard, I think we can do that. Some additional guidance, that would be good. I think to the specific question, I think if an ICANN representative is delivering a public policy, a speech affecting public policy in a room where governments are going to attend, you reasonably expect government representatives to attend, I think that would qualify as being reportable. We need to have a sort of broad audience exception, if you will, or a widely attended audience exception to this reporting requirement. I think while it may be a public statement, a public speech, recorded, et cetera, that's great, but I think it's just helpful to have it put it together in a centralized reporting mechanism so we all know what transpired. So my answer to the question, I believe that, it's enough to know if there's a reasonable expectation that a government representative is in the room, then that to me would be sufficient for reporting purposes. And my advice to ICANN would always be, err on the side of caution. Like any other entity that is engaged in lobbying here in the U.S. or elsewhere, it's always, the rule of thumb is always err on the side of caution. The third question is, what if a pamphlet is designed for broad dissemination and is handed out to a government representative? Again, I think, if there's a reasonable expectation that, that pamphlet's going to be, if regard to a political activity or public policy matter, and it's a reasonable expectation that a government representative is going to get that and going to be informed or educated by that or influenced by that, then I think, again, it should be covered in the reporting requirement. Moving along, the fourth question they ask, what is the definition of a government? Is it anyone who is employed by a governmental entity? My initial answer is yes. If someone is employed by a government, then that person is a representative of a government. And this could be, a direct employee of a government, or if there's if a government has hired a third party contractor, person, consultant, et cetera, to be their representative in a particular instance, then I think that would count too. I don't know if we need to have we as a subgroup are even capable of coming up with a definition of what a government is, but I think this is something that I think any reasonable person can come to understanding on. And again, if we need to provide some clarity in the form of guidance, we can do that. And then a fifth question is by ICANN, who decides what is a matter of public policy? Again, a perfectly fair question, but I think to some extent it's similar. My answer is similar to what I just said about governments. I think this is all based on good faith judgment. In this case, by the reporting entity, and that would be ICANN, as to what constitutes a matter of public policy. I mean, I think I don't know how we could possibly define that accurately without missing something or perhaps being too broad. But I think it's when you see it kind of thing. And if we want, we could provide perhaps a list of specific issues or areas that we see as qualifying as public policy matters, providing again by means of just providing some guidance, but wouldn't be an exhaustive list, of course, but would be some, provide some insight for ICANN to guide them as they go through as they come to determine what is and is not reportable. But I think, again, my suggestion to ICANN would be that you would err on the side of caution in this regard and not be too ultra limiting in what you're going to be reporting. It's always a good faith, reasonable judgment call on any type of reporting requirement. A sixth question asked by ICANN, governments come to ICANN in multiple capacities, including as CCTLD operators or as individual contributors to policy processes. Would each of these touch points be a required area of reporting? I think we answered this, or at least we tried to answer this in our report and recommendations, because I believe this issue came up during discussions during some of the CCWG plenary phone calls. And we made it clear that this reporting requirement does not apply to ICANN and government interactions that are directly related to PDP working groups and policy that's being undertaken within the ICANN community. I think that reporting of that activity would be redundant and unnecessary. The purpose of this reporting requirement, frankly, is to report and provide transparency and engagement that's outside of the traditional, if you will, day-to-day ICANN policymaking processes, which are well documented and vetted. So I think that the answer to this question is no, and I think we hopefully answered that in the report. We could make it even more clear, perhaps, if it was missed. But I think that's not an issue moving forward. Bernie, I see your hands raised.
Thank you, Chris. Ladies and gentlemen, we have about 5 minutes left, and I have a hard stop at the top of the hour. We use the captioning to capture the discussion, as it were, and I line up decisions from the group and action items so we can publish those. And given we've only got a few minutes left, I'm wondering if we could take one or two of those minutes just to run through what we think we've got down as an action item so those can be published correctly.
Yes, that's great, Bernie. Thank you for doing that. Why don't I do this? There's not much more to discuss on interactions with governments other than ICANN also asking about whether ICANN-funded community stakeholders are included. Again, I think I answered that question. The answer is no, because they're not agents or employees of ICANN, and we can provide, again, better clarity on that. We still have, there was discussion about whistleblower. There were some comments made about the whistleblower section, which I can get to on the email list. Nothing, I don't think, substantive, based on what I could tell. A little more clarity sought here and there. I think a few different commenters thought the term whistleblower or hotline was too colloquial and that we should come up with a different name. But I think ultimately that the whistleblower recommendations were supported by all, and we can move forward there. So, I think, and Michael, we can talk more, but I think the suggestion would be we'd have another call of the subgroup perhaps in a couple of weeks. I know Michael's got a lot of work to do, perhaps in reworking some of the DIDP recommendations. I can provide written responses to the questions regarding interactions with governments, ICANN's questions. If we need to, I can add additional section to the report and recommendations on sort of providing official better guidance on those questions, and I think Bernie, one point will be perhaps put out a formal response back to ICANN, asking for some additional feedback on some of the issues that were raised in the DIDP discussion, the issues regarding cost, greater clarity from that, from ICANN.org on some of the points that they raised would be helpful. So that's I kind of see where we're going next, and you know, hopefully in 2 weeks' time we will have clarified and responded appropriately to the comments that were made by the community. Michael, did you have one more to add to that?
No, that sounds perfect. I just put into the chat the action items that I see for DIDP, and I think that we should schedule the next meeting for about 2 weeks out and reach out to ICANN in the meantime.
Do others on the subgroup have thoughts, questions, concerns about the path forward? Okay. Bernie, I see your hand raised.
Sorry, old hand, but I'll take advantage of it. So basically, I've got three action items coming out of here. Staff scheduled the next meeting for about 2 weeks from now, and I'll run some dates by you, and you can select them accordingly. Michael will draft amendments to DIDP recommendations as per comments. I'm not going to go into details. And Michael to reach out to ICANN Legal to clarify objections and cost concerns. Is that okay?
This is Chris. That sounds good to me. Michael, is that okay with you?
Sounds good to me.
Excellent. Thank you, John.
All right. Thanks, everybody. I guess we're right on time.
Great. Thanks, everybody. I look forward to working with you all on the list and on the next call. Thank you.
Bye.